like having two of your defenders sent off, just like last season. But this season, it's That So MLS. Myself, Nick Thornton, and of course, as always, Andrew Bates.
Hello, Nick. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm better than New England right now.
It's all back. The MLS regular season has begun again.
Exactly. And it's in some ways, it's like it never left. It's like we picked up right where we left off for a few teams. But certainly it was a weekend full of surprises. But overall, of course, neither of us could really watch many games because there's no real legal way to watch games anymore if you're not a cable subscriber.
That's actually got better.
It did?
Yes. Just prior, like literally the day before to the season open, they announced that they would be putting games on DAZN, which is a streaming service. And this is for all the MLS live out of market games.
Yeah,
are going on this streaming service that does cost about kind of like $20 a month. But this is the same one that the NFL is on in Canada.
Right.
So it kind of has. While it costs a little bit more than MLS Live, it's like you also get, if you buy it for the year, it's $150. If you pay, it's $20 a month otherwise. And you get the NFL, La Liga, Serie A, and the J-League, among other interesting weirdness like European hockey and darts.
Okay. And we can sort out sharing an account later on, I assume, in the show. $20 a month, man. That's stiff.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're on MLS salaries here. I don't have that.
It's about the same. It's about the same price as Sportsnet, which has NBA and Major League Baseball, which I think is what they're thinking people are going to buy into. Right. But there's lots in it was. My understanding was that the service had a lot of hiccups out of the gate, but when they first started doing NFL stuff, but it's pretty clean.
Right.
It looks they have the Eurosport guys doing MLS games.
Okay.
So that's new for some people.
It can't be any worse than that American commentator who goes, "It's in the net! It's in the net! It's in the net!" It's like
Matt.
Who says that in any soccer game? Why is that the tagline? Oh, it's in the net.
I don't know. Maybe we could get. Maybe this will give the opportunity for a generation of broadcasters. But it worked well for me this weekend. I got to take in. Houston versus the one I got to take the most of in was Houston versus Atlanta.
All right, well let's the start service. There because this was, I mean, in many ways there were a lot of things this weekend we were like, oh yeah, MLS, but also a lot of things we were like, what is happening in the league? of course, it's opening weekend, so you can only read in so much to it. But Houston Dynamo, Atlanta United away. Atlanta had a pretty okay offseason, made a couple of good signings, but kept their core that was so successful last year. And then what happened?
Well, I don't think that this result is not the best, but I don't think that this is a total repudiation of what they put together. Partially, Brad Guzan had a great game for them until the third goal, at which point it was like, what happened with that?
Which, I just want to point out before I forget, on that third goal, it was an awful punch away. They were also into the 50th minute in the first half, because there were supposed to be 7 added minutes, and somehow they played
over the top
of that, which I didn't see. That somehow wasn't the story, or not that I heard of.
And that was the weirdest thing.
Reviewing and looking at the highlights, I'm looking at the timestamp, and I'm going, okay, there were not that many, like, there were definitely stoppages in that game and some delays, but 10 minutes of added time in the first half is, like, Come on, that's baffling. Only in MLS can you have 10 minutes of added time after the first half.
So my understanding from watching the first half was that there were two injury stoppages. Now, I'm not sure if those actually resulted in subs because I can't recall, but I believe they both happened to Houston. And that was kind of like, at the time, the announcers were trying to like to rationalize it to themselves. Like, they were like,
yeah,
right. Right, because Juan Cabezas came out on the 15th minute, and then Perez for Atlanta came out on the 39th. So there were two first-half substitutions, which I both believe were injury subs. And the commentators, I thought, were like, I guess.
But the thing is, like, did the referees not know you don't have to add the actual amount of time? Like, it hasn't the rule always been it's sort of a guess? Like... Okay,
yeah.
It took 4 minutes, so we'll call it two. There was two of them, so we'll call it four. But this reminded me, this was like a Canadian Championship League. Like, I thought it was FC Edmonton for a second, with just like nine added minutes in the first half. But clearly, of course, I was eating my words this whole match, because in our preamble to the season, I was saying, we both were saying that Houston really didn't look like they'd done much in the offseason, and... were kind of boring us a little bit with what the potential of their season looked like, and they come in and storm Atlanta and beat them 4-0.
Oh, man. With a couple of great goals, too. And also the fact that it was 3-0 after 30 minutes was mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. It's certainly not the first time we've both been wrong about this kind of thing, though. The one thing I'll say about this, too, though, is, I of course was surprised, and I'm happy to eat humble pie on this one, but it doesn't tell us all that much. I mean, we know Houston is a good home team. We know the kind of pace they have. And really, it looked like, for the most part, it was Atlanta's defenders just completely asleep. I think there was maybe one good Houston goal, but the other three were just defenders not marking their men and really caught flat-footed. Parkhurst looked like somebody forgot to tell him where the game was, and just spent a lot of the time sort of whipping his head back and forth going, huh?
I said this a little bit earlier, but really, as much as obviously it's not great for a goalkeeper when you've conceded four times, but if it wasn't for Guzan, it could have been six or seven.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
When it was three, people were saying it could have been five.
Yeah, and many people are saying it could have been 10. And, I mean, it's also one of those things where the momentum helps carry a team, obviously, because they did get four goals in the first half, and then it sort of stopped. But
yeah.
Almiron had a couple of chances that he just couldn't put away, and just it seemed to not be his night. On another night, defenders are paying attention. One of those goals doesn't come in and Atlanta comes back and scores two goals, and it's 3-2 instead of 4-0. But obviously that's not what happened.
Mm. I was wondering, there was a question I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
Based on our conversation of you being an Arsenal fan in the last issue.
How dare you?
When Sendero scored, have you got the chance to see him live playing for the Dynamo?
No.
What does it feel like to you as an Arsenal fan to see him still out in a big contributor for Houston?
I mean, I think it's great.
Despite
all my cynicism, I like to see players do well, and just because they're in a different environment and playing for a different team, you know, it's always a good thing. And we'll get to that when we get to LAFC as well. I'm happy to see players succeed.
I was thinking about this because, and why I was thinking about it was because of like the times that I got to see, like I would say that I'm a bigger MLS fan now than I am a Premiership fan.
Yeah.
But like the players in those first couple of years that I started following the sport at all, getting to see some of them, and I'm thinking of Youngkyo Lee and Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
Getting to see them live was always such a head trip moment for me, because it's like, I think I spent so much time in high school sort of, you know, minutely analyzing these things, and it's like, you're real! There they are, right in the pitch, right in the flesh. So it's interesting to, I'm not advocating for, you know, MLS being a retirement league, but I do get a little special pleasure every time I see a player that I grew up with.
Absolutely. And again, we'll get to that a little later on in the show, but I completely agree. And like I said, it's great. And honestly, aside from, I know that I like to give some of the retirees a hard time, but you know, they're great for a reason. And I think somebody recently said this about David Villa, is like, people can laugh about his age all they want and talk about he's come here to retire, but okay, so you're defending him. What do? You know, when he cuts it in a tight corner in the box, what do you actually do as a defender? And, like, nobody has any answers to that. He's a fantastic player. Is he in his prime? No, but that doesn't make him not an amazing player. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's Wright Phillips is another example of that, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't quite the star he could have been in Europe, although he certainly did well for himself. But these are fantastic players, and they're professionals as well. They're good at this. They're good at putting the ball in the thing.
That's what they're, yes. They're even, age doesn't always detract from that. Another big surprise, and I know you were kind of, I didn't know if you wanted to jump to this right away, I think a lot of people were watching Toronto very closely.
Indeed.
To see whether or not they would repeat their triumph. And they lost to Columbus 2-0, which I don't think is something that a lot of people had on their office pools, perhaps.
No, I think you're quite right in that. This is one of the few games that I was able to watch the whole thing live of, and I enjoyed every second of it. And you know, I think there's a lot being said about, oh, you know, the Toronto's preparing for CCL and midweek and all of this, but really, Columbus won this game. Toronto didn't lose it. Columbus won it. It was a masterful tactical stroke from them, and they did absolutely everything right. And I think that kind of turned luck on their side, that Toronto just couldn't seem to string anything together, and Columbus just frustrated them. And all the things that we saw Toronto do so well last season, we saw glimmers of it. They didn't play poorly, but Columbus capitalized on every single mistake. They pressed for the whole game. Abubakar, I think, was the man of the match because he was just defending for his life back there and cutting off key runs and shutting down Altidore and Giovinco. I mean, it's a surprising result, of course, but when you watch the game, it really only felt like one team was ever going to win it, and that was Columbus.
Yeah, I really liked Higuain's first goal.
Oh, it was gorgeous. And that's another great thing I like to see is when you have a player like Higuain that's, you know, he's a little bit older. I think he requested a transfer in the off season. He stayed with the club, and he just came out flying. Like, it didn't seem to affect him at all. He put his head down, got it done. It was great. And then Kamara as well got his goal as well, which I thought was nice.
I thought that...
not Kamara. We made the opposite.
I said the opposite thing last week. I called Zardes, Kamara Zardes in L.A., but no, it was Zardes. We were talking about perhaps he would have he will find things a little nicer in Columbus, and he did manage to poach a pretty pass very early on. Or no, he was at, did manage to poach a pretty pass that second goal.
Yeah, it's great to see him open his account, and I apologize that I'm a little behind on things. I'm still adjusted to this new season and where everyone is. But yes, of course, it was Zardes who has come over. And he looks good. I like a player like him that had a not a good season last season and has just come in and decided to change the script. And, of course, it's only opening day, but You know, he's playing against as good of a defense as he's going to play against all season.
Mm-hmm.
He got his goal, so.
I got the sense, and I don't know that this was entirely resting players, but we'll come back to it probably a little bit later when you see some of the second half chances that went wanting. It felt a little bit like a chance to try out a new look Toronto with players like Aro and Akeche in key roles, and unfortunately not scoring in those key roles. But it looked like a very different attack than the one that we saw last season, or the one that we saw in midweek.
I agree, but I think part of that was because of the lineup and the tactics that Berhalter put out. So I think Greg Vanney was also just responding to that.
Mm.
And that very clearly, 30 minutes or so in, Columbus is in control of that game, and he had to change something. And I think Columbus did the right thing, and they rattled Toronto a little bit. Is if you sit back and you let them have possession, they're going to turn it into a passing clinic and find the spaces down the wing and score a bunch of goals.
Mm-hmm.
But if you press high and you, when you looked at the way that they were covering, the, you know, midfield and defense was putting two or three guys on whoever had the ball, and the second mm-hmm. that ball went away, two of those guys would go over and help support the other guy. So it, for much of the game, you felt like there was always three people defending any guy with the ball.
Right.
Which is a really hard style to play. It takes a tremendous amount of energy and fitness to do. But they, again, there was no luck about that. It wasn't a beat them on the counterattack. It was a know what Toronto is good at and exploit them or beat them at the things that they can do well. And Columbus has a very strong midfield, as does Toronto. And I thought the two lined up well against each other.
What else surprised you this weekend?
What else surprised about the whole weekend?
I mean, in terms of results.
In terms of results. Honestly, one of my big surprises was LAFC, which we know is a good club. They've put together a really good roster, but I was quite surprised that Seattle wasn't able to get the draw there. And that, especially, I think the goal was in like the, you know, somewhere between the 11th and the 20th minute from Rossi. I was quite surprised Seattle wasn't able to do something and turn that one around and get a point out of it. However, LAFC showed that they really did invest in good defenders and are able to lock things down. You don't want to read too much into it, but Seattle has looked certainly a good club, and considering their recent Champions League success, it is somewhat surprising to me.
I think that the... I think the two big parts of it are that red card late kind of cut off the ability to make a late push. Mm-hmm. They were trying, but you kind of knew at that point, as soon as that happened, that the momentum was going to go away.
And who got the card?
The red card was given to Seattle defender Seattle's Tony Alfaro.
Oh, right, Alfaro got sent off. Yeah.
For a second yellow. On sporting behaviors, both. In terms of what to take away throughout the whole season, it's like, as much as it doesn't necessarily mean anything later on, I think last year you could really predict Toronto and Seattle meeting each other in the final from a far distance off.
Mm-hmm.
And to have them both lose to teams that improved in the offseason shows that, you know, the rest of the league is doing their best to catch up.
Yeah. It's one of the most competitive soccer leagues in the world. We know that. And
mm-hmm.
I know that that's very much how MLS has been pitching it, but it's true. When you look at leagues across the world right now, MLS is wide open, and it's so easy to focus in on the one team that you follow and just think, okay, well, they've made improvements or they haven't made improvements. But you have to consider every other team that's been rebuilding or moving players around. And there's just been so much change in the last 4 months or, well, 3 months since we were last doing this. And you see the expansion sides are now coming in and they're ready to compete. Again, it's one result. LAFC could fall flat on their face and lose 8 in a row, but you see what they're made of and what they're trying to build, and they look like a club with a plan. They look organized. They look like they have team chemistry. I don't think that's just luck.
Mm-hmm. No, I think they've done a really sort of calculated job of putting everything together. One thing that surprised me, because we kind of brushed them off pretty quickly, was Philadelphia winning 2-0 against New England.
Okay, could we? I want to say one more thing about LA before we go there. But
Yes, please.
I want to talk about that game. Is, speaking of former Arsenal players, Carlos Vela, I've always been a big fan of. Great to see him get the assist. And the young kid, Rossi, get the goal as well. Like, I love that. You get this, the young new signing in, scores on the opening day, and just does all the... Where so many strikers get it wrong, he gets it right. Just plays it nice and simple, but there's a touch of class there as well, where you go, Rossi... Everyone's been talking about Carlos Vela. Rossi could be the real dangerous striker for LAFC this season.
That is a goal that you can, and I think will see... that you can show anyone, and I think you will see it in ad packs throughout the season. I don't think anyone can look at that and say, this isn't a team that wants to attack, or this is not a team that has quality. That was a real characteristic scoring play.
Yeah, I loved it. But Philadelphia beating New England. So I don't quite remember how we rated these teams, but you're surprised by that result?
Well, I mean, I was down on New England, but I still ranked them pretty decently in terms of, like, I was down on England as underachievers, New England. And I didn't really have any interest in Philadelphia. So to see Philadelphia deliver was something that was surprising to me, at least in a two-goal way. New England kind of did it to themselves with the red cards, as mentioned in the open, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think we were both a little down on New England, but it was quite surprising to see just how much things hadn't changed there, that they suffered from discipline problems late last season, and that really seemed to pick up again. Two obvious red cards. Like, it was really New England's fault through and through. I mean, there's no way that you can dispute either one was a red card. And Philadelphia, we know, is not a great team, but they are a good team, and they will pounce on mistakes as well. And CJ Sapong is to me, the sort of unsung MLS striker that nobody really pays attention to, but just consistently scores goals and tucks it away. They get a beautiful first goal, but Sapong had 3 or 4 chances, and New England just looked completely undone in every sense, and that really showed in their defending. And now they're going back home for their home opener without two of their starting center backs because of just stupid mistakes. Like, they're not even tackles. It was guys hauling people down on the shoulders, and just
the...
You have to be like, what are you thinking? Like, just let the commentators run past you if that's the case. Like, why risk the red card?
The commentators seem to suggest that they were professional fouls in a way that maybe I'm not sure for the first one, but especially the second one. That I think there was a strong suggestion that, like, the attempt was that, like, it obviously was denying an obvious goal scoring opportunity, but, like, that was the point. Which I don't know. I don't know if you want to do, even if you mean to, you know? Like,
And that second card, as well, is also because of persistent fouls. Because the other thing was, is it Delamea? No, Delamea was the first guy sent off. Dielna. Dielna was, but it was like the third or fourth time. He was already sitting on a yellow. The referee was trying to let things go. And, you know, if you know you're sitting on a yellow, okay, it's a professional foul, but you, it's the 86th minute. You're denying a scoring opportunity.
And you're losing.
And you're losing. What do you think is going to happen? Like, I side with the referee on this one. I think that he was incredibly patient here and was trying not to give a red. But at that point in the game, how many of those do you let go before you go, no, this is we're done here. And the De La Mea one, I think, is just it's such an obvious red card. There's no argument there. And he knew it, too. I mean, he only argued once the referee kind of went to his earpiece, but he knew he was getting sent off as soon as that whistle went.
I might have this wrong, but this just kind of goes to the weirdness of Philadelphia coming out of week one looking dominant. At the 90th minute, I believe somebody on the sideline screamed, "Bring on Toronto!" It might have been a fan, but it certainly
run
sounded like
you
a
walk.
Kid.
It's MLS.
Somebody took the appropriate moment of the one dead second of dead air to scream it at the top of their lungs.
Amazing. we had a number of other results that kind of didn't tell us too much about things other than soccer games were played. One of them is Orlando City versus DC United. A bit of a crazy game. I think I sent you a message early on into it.
Just, yes!
This game is total bananas because it was just so chippy and there was like mass confrontations. In the 20th minute, nothing had even happened yet. And I don't know if it was just Orlando's energy, but it was nice to see Justin Merrim, the new transfer to Orlando, kind of have to step in and calm his players down a little bit and be like, all right, let's as usual, Will Johnson looked for the whole game like he was going to do a murder. But it's unfortunate for DC that they allowed the equalizer, because I thought for most of the game, DC United came out really after them and put on a great performance. And Orlando is the team that we talked about really having made a lot of great off-season signings and really rebuilt the team, but DC looked fantastic, and dare I even say it, our old buddy Darren Maddox looked turned on and ready to score a goal.
These teams were both obviously improved. I thought that Maddox was obviously looked motivated. It was unfortunate for him that he didn't score the penalty kick early.
Yeah.
But I thought what was interesting about the DC attack was kind of a almost a misdirection, because like all of the motion is happening with Maddox, but some of the key elements of the game were Yamil Assad. I thought he was a really key point, obviously in the goal, but I thought that he played a quiet but very effective role in the attack.
Absolutely, and I sort of had forgotten that. I mean, that's such a coup for DC United. I mean, I know they paid a lot of money for him, but to pry him away from Atlanta, he looked great. And it's one of those things where you see that DC United is a team that was okay to mediocre last season, and they add a couple of pieces, and all of a sudden you go, shit, this is a good team. Like, people are going to struggle to beat this team this year. They weren't electric, but they put on a good performance. And with somebody like Assad in the middle of the pitch, you kind of go like, okay, this could be good.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Merrim looked great. Bendik looked great. You always love to see a goalkeeper save a penalty, because they have this, you feel like they could then, like, you know.
I thought he was going to take off for a minute. It looked like he's just going to slap his chest and his boots would burst into flames and he'd just disappear into the stratosphere. He was quite happy with himself.
He could kill a frost giant. Certainly.
And more power to him. Joe Bendik is an incredible goalkeeper. He's got ice in his veins.
I've also acquired my new, I don't know if favorite is the right word for this, but the piece, the Orlando midfielder PC.
Oh yeah.
His name is Victor Giro or whatever. He's from Brazil, but I guess he picked as his mononym. He picked PC because when he was 11, there was a good 20-year-old in the same Corinthians youth camp named Paulo Cesar or something like that. And it just, nobody ever would consent to stop calling him that.
I love it.
But it just says PC on the back of his jersey.
I know, it's weird. But those are those, if you're a DP, then you can call yourself PC.
Oh my God. DPPC. Put the whole thing on there. GSDPPC.
We also had sort of an exciting game in San Jose.
Yes.
Against Minnesota, which isn't necessarily... San Jose and Minnesota aren't... You wouldn't necessarily think like, ooh, that's going to be a 5-goal game. But maybe not surprising in the sense that Minnesota has struggled defensively last season immensely and given up a lot of goals. And we saw that again. Although Danny Hosen was kind of putting on a one-man show for the most part. And I think just a... Really, we're talking about skill and quality that won San Jose that game. What did you take away from this one?
I am just really blown away by Hosen, actually. I don't really remember seeing him that much last year. I guess he was a loan signee in February, and then he signed permanently at the end of December. So I didn't remember... Oh, he only played... Oh, I didn't remember seeing him for San Jose very much at all, but he was a real threat in this game with his brace. But he also had a part in the middle game too. He had a deflection on the way to the eventual goal in that second mark.
Yeah, I mean, he was just so good, and you know, in Minnesota, credit to them to go down 3-0 and come back with 2 goals. And Kevin Molino earning his keep with 2 spectacular. He got 2 goals, didn't he?
Correctly. He had one really great individual effort where it was like...
Which is what you want to see. You want to see your major players step up. But Minnesota's another team where you just... I kind of went, what have they added to the picture? Like, what's different this season? And... San Jose may have not changed a lot of things, but they showed what San Jose does so well when it works. And for the most part, Minnesota just looked very, very exposed and kind of lying flat. But a good response. Yeah, Molino got both goals.
Our Wondolowski question seems to have been at least one piece of evidence was provided. I thought that I saw him as a provider on one of the Hosen goals, and I thought that he did a pretty good job of being a veteran in the side.
Yeah. You know, it's always easy to write off an older domestic player, but it's easy to forget how much that experience counts for and understanding the league and understanding how people defend in MLS, even though it has changed over the years. But, you know, Wondolowski is always somebody that, I mean, the goals speak for themselves, but I've never been overall that impressed with. But he just seemed to be all over the place and really motivating the team in that match. And I can see why he stayed with the club, even though results may have not necessarily gone their way in the past few years. But, I mean, his record speaks for itself. And I thought this game was yet another example where you go, Wondolowski is going to have another great season and score a bunch of goals and be the provider and be the captain and push everyone along.
Mm-hmm. In the Dallas RSL draw, I don't know, there was a lot to remark on. Joao Plata continues to be amazing. Like, I was just sort of, again, caught with the how good his talent is. The other thing I wanted to say is that the crucial away goal was scored by Marcel, crucial own goal that that tied it up, was scored by Marcelo Silva, who had the best own goal celebration I've ever seen. Or not celebration, but response.
It's a reaction, yeah. It was a bit of a weird game.
The ball deflects off his foot into the goal, basically. And it bounces right back to him. And he rage kicks it into the goal, but it bounces right back to him again. So he turns and gives it a second rage kick. Third kick of the whole movement. It's like, he can't get rid of it. He can't get rid of this this own goal shame.
As a person who has spent time in the back line, I can only feel sympathy. but it was a brilliant little bit of work from Dallas to just... was it Rudy? I think it was a Rudy that sent that ball in, and he knew it. I mean, he's using the defender as his own man, and it's just going to hit it as hard as he can off of him.
Mm-hmm.
But I have nothing but sympathy for a defender in that situation. There's not too much. He was in the right position. You know, maybe he should have turned his body a little bit and been facing the player more. But yeah, I've been in those situations, and it ain't pretty. As somebody who once, as a goalkeeper, was trying to clear the ball, kicked it, and it just ricocheted off the shins of an attacker and went into my own net. I have a lot of sympathy for defenders now.
No doubt.
But I agree. Plata, you know, he only scored 7 goals last season and was a little bit out of form, and I think he had some injury troubles as well. But great to see from him. And I keep forgetting that he's such a wee guy. You don't see as many small strikers in MLS.
No.
With that, you know, obviously he's got speed, but he's also got the agility to get between defenders, and it's just a perfect bit of individual skill. Although it was a great pass that got him into that to begin with, but you know, he's got 2 defenders and the goalkeeper to beat, and just calmly turns both defenders and puts it home. It was great to see, and I hope that that's the form that he continues in, because you want to see strikers like that succeed.
RSL are not what I would consider at the heights they once were, but he is a huge part of their success then and now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, when you see him do things like that, you understand why. And they haven't necessarily caught up with every other team, but or maybe made as many signings as they could have and changed things. But RSL's always been a good team. And this was a perfect example of seeing them do what they did well. I'll also say Dallas definitely improved their roster and put up a good fight. And to me, this was a good example of what we can expect to see mid-season with 2 teams like this that are going to be battling it out. And you're going to get probably a lot of draws this season between teams like this that have changed things around but have also kept what's good for them.
Mm-hmm. On the second day, did you get to see any of Portland, LA?
Any of what, sorry?
Did you get to see any of the Portland, LA Galaxy game?
I did. So I watched a bit of this one. And against all things that seem reasonable and natural to me, I was cheering for Portland. until I forgot that Diego Valeri wasn't there anymore. I was pretty impressed by what I saw. Portland played okay, and I thought they had an okay game plan, but just really couldn't seem to string things together. But where I thought LA did exceptionally well was the fitness of the team. They were chasing the balls down. They were forcing a lot of errors. And maybe it wasn't the most entertaining game in the world, but, you know, within 2 minutes of each other, Ola Kamara gets his first goal as an LA Galaxy member, and then Alessandrini does the same thing 2 minutes later. I thought this was such a positive performance from a team that struggled so much, and as we've talked about, really didn't seem to do a hell of a lot in the offseason that would make us think they'd be a successful team this year. You know, Sebastian Blanco got a goal back sort of midway into or early into the second half to But LA really, really brought it on this one. And Portland is a tough team to beat. Yes, of course, it's a new season under a new coach, but Portland wasn't lacking for chances. But Galaxy defended well, and again, proving myself wrong, again, slagging off Ashley Cole. I thought he had an absolutely brilliant game and just seemed to be in all the right places and didn't put a foot wrong. And I think one of the commentators said, you know, he's playing like a 20-year-old.
Oh.
I can't argue. He seemed to have energy to spare.
Well, players like Alessandrini, Cole, and Gio Dos Santos, even if, you know, there haven't been a lot of additions, if you could wake those players up, you've made a big addition to your team without actually signing a player.
That's a really good point. But I'm glad that you brought up the Dos Santos brothers, because to me, they were still the weak spot in the team. They're really going to need to switch it on and play at a much higher level. But if they can, I agree. It's like having four new players on your team. But it's can they perform, and also how do they respond to adversity as well?
I wasn't that surprised by Kansas City, New York City, with New York getting the win. Starting off the season well. I always kind of think that, and who knows if it's going to be that way this year again, but I think the story for New York over the last few years has been that they're predominant against many of the teams they face until they play Toronto.
They're always such an overly, easily overlooked team, but I can't say I'm particularly surprised by the result either. It seems like Sporting KC played okay, but New York City just had that final little bit of class that got the result for them, so I don't know. If you're Sporting KC, I don't think you'd be too concerned at this point. An unfortunate result, but New York City, for me, it's really about will there be the consistency there over the season?
Mm-hmm. That brings us to your favorite team of mine, the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Indeed. I sort of forgot. I'm looking at all these other results. I forgot. The game I was at.
Mm-hmm. I guess I said that about City, but they didn't play Toronto in the playoffs last year. But in the regular season.
Yeah.
I mean. But yes, the game you were at, Vancouver beat the Impact 2-0 or 2-1, and were 2-1. Able to win the opening game of the season for the first time since 2014.
Yeah, I'd sort of forgotten that too, that it's been a while, you know? Mm-hmm. In front of a sellout crowd too, the highest ever attendance for a Vancouver Whitecaps game, including the pre-MLS era, which was great.
I think season opener.
Season opener.
Is the caveat there.
Thank you. Got the team historian here. but no, it was a fantastic atmosphere. I think at points it was a little bit subdued. There was definitely more people than we were used to, but it was a little nervy at points. Mm-hmm. The first half, I think the second half made up for the first half. The first half had some chances, but really was a bit boring. And especially considering Montreal seemed really out of sorts in the first half, I was quite surprised that the Whitecaps weren't able to capitalize on that in the first half and make something of it. But that being said, came out in the second half and clearly responded well.
Mm-hmm. I was really excited. I think that it's hard to look at the goals in the game and see anything else, but the partnership between Alphonso Davies and Kai Kamara being a real high point.
Absolutely. That first goal, it's not a good cross into the box, really, because it's coming in quite low. But Kai Kamara it's an incredible piece of skill, and we've seen him do it before, so it's not particularly surprising. But just gets a low flick on it and redirects it into the near post, and just you know, it's one of those goals that you see it happening and you still have a delayed reaction because you can't quite believe that it somehow went in off of a header at waist height. But really, really great to see. And then, you know, I don't want to brag, but I did my part in this game too, because things didn't seem to pick up after that goal, but there was a little bit of momentum and I could feel the crowd building. So I thought, well, this is the time to go and get another drink. And I'm well known in my section as the guy who can turn a game around simply by leaving for a minute or two. So I get up and go. And of course, as I'm sort of finishing the transaction, I hear the crowd roaring through the entrance, and I look back at the screen just as the ball goes across the line. So although I'm sad to say I didn't see Alphonso Davies' goal live in person, I take full credit for the goal, for having the exact right moment.
I think that those two goals really meant something. I think both in terms of it being, for Davies, it was such, I think the club have been so patient with him, and he had a little bit of a drop off near to the end of last season. But if you think of a player who's valued for what he's valued for, not having scored at the MLS level, although he's scored everywhere else, the team has been very good at A, not taking opportunities away from him because of that, and B, like not making, treating it in a way to hurt his confidence. It's been a long journey to get to this point, but it really feels like he's earned it.
It has been. And I'll say this too. For 60 minutes, it didn't look like it was going to happen for him. And, you know, there's a lot of people looking at each other like, okay, are we going to call the sub soon? Because Alphonso Davies is doing what Alphonso Davies does. He bolts down he started out on the left, and then I think he switched with Teixeira at one point. But bombs down the wing, wins the ball, goes 1v1 versus defenders, beats them, and rifles it into the side netting or passes it into nowhere. And it's not a question of whether or not Davies is going to get into space and win the ball or beat a defender. It's, is anything going to happen after that? And for the better part of a year, it's kind of been a foregone conclusion that nothing's really going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was good to see him add the final piece. But I think, as any good coach would say, is what Carl Robinson would say, is now he just needs to keep doing it. And if he can add the crosses to his game, then he really does become a lethal winger. But he needs to focus on that, not on trying to score the goals. He needs to see the guys open. But he's obviously got chemistry with Kamara, which is fantastic to see. And they, I'd say Teixeira, Davies, and Kamara were playing together. Like, they've played together for 4 more seasons. They look to have an understanding with each other that could be a real tasty treat this season.
Absolutely. I thought about that as well. And sort of the cementing of Kamara is such an important part of this team. I wrote about that this week in a blog post, that he, obviously, since arriving, like, his charisma and the amount that he is willing to sort of personally put himself behind the team as a project has been evident. Yeah. But getting that first goal in the first game, and it sort of, you know, cements, I am your star that you wanted.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, of course, it's easy to say in hindsight. I was going to say this game was going to end 2-1 for the Whitecaps and Kamara would score. I need to start saying this stuff in advance. Because now everyone's going to say, oh, yeah. Of course. Of course. Yeah, sure. That's what you were thinking. But to me, it was just so crucial that he did score in this game. To just start off on the right foot, and immediately you could feel it. You went, there's a little bit of star power he brought. I think people overlooked that. I think it's not coincidence that it was a sellout crowd with him there. He definitely brought people into that stadium. But he needed to score a goal. And you felt that shift right away where you go, oh, he's in. He will be our star this season. long gone is Montero, and he's gone and forgotten because yeah. Mike Kamara is here, and he's our star striker now.
Yeah.
A couple of things that I want to say about this match, though. Well, actually, why don't you talk about it? I mean, I've been blabbering on, but what did you think of it?
The thing that I thought, almost the exception that proved the rule of how important those goals were, is that by the point that those two important things have happened, you're leading 2-0 in the season opener. Everyone was in such a good mood that I think that it was so important that everyone kind of forgot the impact was there. Yeah. And when Matteo Mancosu scored the goal with 10 minutes or on the 81st minute with about 10 minutes left, there was kind of like a stunned silence in the stadium. Like, oh, there's more game that's happening.
There's another team on the pitch.
There's a real possibility they could come back and draw because there's like another 10 minutes after this.
Yes.
And like, it was not instant in terms of recovering from that goal into a mentality of being able to repress the Montreal attack, even though not a lot had happened. Even though not a lot had happened previous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, one of the things that I saw early on, or rather, I should point out, Tim, my friend who sits beside me, saw, is that the Whitecaps were running everything down the left side, because that's where Piatti wasn't. Mm-hmm. And Montreal really, 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 really struggled with it. And then in the second half, they kind of beat us at our own game and started running everything down the right half. And you know, I think they were getting damn close to getting a second goal as well. This is the kind of season start you want, because it shows you what you're good at, mm-hmm. and you win the game, and it also shows you that, oh, right, you need to see out a game, and you need to be switched on. And you know, De Jong looked good for much of the match, but if I'm not mistaken, that was his to clean up at the back, and he was just caught sleeping a little bit, and you know, the ball goes in. The other minor point I want to make is we only saw a few minutes of him, but Anthony Blondel is a big lad. I think he might even be taller than Kai Kamara. And to have a striker as a young 19, I think he's 19, a young striker come off the bench that is as big and as strong and as quick, I went, oh, this could actually be something interesting this season, because it's not just, okay, we've got Kai Kamara, we know he can score goals, and we know we've got Eric Hurtado, and we know he can score goals, and we know he's quick and adds a different dimension, but Anthony Blondel is a big dude. He's a big, strong, young striker, and I would be fascinated to see what they do if they're ever on the pitch together. But again, from what I saw in only a few minutes, but looking into at the off-season games as well, or the preseason rather, it seems to be a possibility that Blondel could start, Kamara could sub on, and vice versa, quite neatly. Because you've got the big, strong target man in the box. And I don't think that's coincidence. I think that's definitely by design.
That could be good, especially in the length of the season, if some extra rest needs to be taken.
Yeah, absolutely. When games get condensed and travel becomes an issue, you go Blondel for 60, 65 minutes, Chuck Hurtado on, Kamara if he's fit, or you know, rest him for a week. But it really does feel like we have attacking options, and to me the big unknown is still Philippe. You know, he flew in the day before and he got I think about 15-20 minutes in the match, and he looked okay, but I mean, once he's up to speed, it really does become a pretty interesting picture in the midfield with a lot of experience. And I think Russell Tybert over the weekend, if I'm not mistaken, had the highest percentage of complete passes in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And does what he does. He chases down the ball. He chases down players, and he's like a little chihuahua nipping at your heels. But his passes, short and long, were just pinpoint. And if that's what he's added to his game this season, it could be really, really difficult to keep him out of the starting lineup, because a lot of things happened because of Russell Tybert.
A lot was talked about in terms of a change of formation, and in the end, it was 4-1-4-1, which is not that much different than the 4-3-2-1 setup that happened before. But I would say that in terms of that style and in the confidence in passing, it's completely different than the counterattack soaking up pressure style that we saw at the end of last season.
It is, and let's hope it stays. Boot it and run. So we got a couple of other things to talk about before we wrap up, because it's not been a good week for Mexico. Or a good couple of days for them, and the newspapers were incensed this week. But in Champions League action, we started out the week with New York Red Bulls just shutting out Club Tijuana 2-0.
All three teams that took on Mexican opposition, New York against Tijuana, Seattle against Chivas, and Toronto against Tigres, won, which is not how this competition goes.
No. Not traditionally.
MLS teams have only won twice ever against Mexican opposition, so... It's surprising. Or in this competition, so it's surprising.
Yeah, and the thing that makes it exciting to me is how incensed the Mexican newspapers were. And I mean, they're good for a bit of drama on a slow news day. But the big result for me here was Toronto. And Osorio's little backheeled goal that... I don't know. Is it overstating it to say the tide is changing a little bit and all of a sudden North American soccer can compete? Has that much changed since last season that we can say that? Is it really that big of a leap to see Toronto win 2-1 over Tigres when, you know, Vancouver competed but obviously got outplayed last season and really could only do so much?
Obviously, it's impressive. I think there are some people that were wondering whether or not it was kind of hype on the MLS side, but these are legitimate achievements, all three of the games. But I had seen one point made by a Twitter user, Tutul is my name, who pointed out that two of the three games were at home. Toronto and Seattle are both great at home.
Yeah.
They were great results. But I think that my experience of watching the Whitecaps versus Tigres last year was that you cannot count them out until the match is over. You know what I mean? Like, that, I think, was a key part of the experience, that the Whitecaps in those games started strong and were able to make things happen, but like just couldn't outlast teams that were so good.
Yeah. The indication for me last season too was that Tigres put out a starting lineup. They put out their best players. They flew them to Vancouver to win that game, and they did have to fight for it. They thoroughly outplayed us in the end, but I feel like the tide has been changing for a little bit, and now we're beginning to see some results. I don't think this means that forevermore MLS will dominate Mexican teams in the Champions League, and I expect you're right, or the young Twitter user is right as well, that come the away leg, that's when things will really matter, because we know what a team like Tigres and certainly Guadalajara can do. I don't know much about Club Tijuana, but you know, so, for them, they've got a bit more of an uphill battle to climb. But, you know, if Tigres at home scores two goals and holds Toronto 0-0, then all of a sudden you've got a tie game that goes to penalties. And Toronto doesn't always come out on the right side of those.
That is the stat. That is the stat cited by the user in question, was that Liga MX teams, I believe, outscore MLS teams at home by 2 goals on average.
Yes.
So
yeah,
I think that what this shows is that they are competitive. But in terms of the fact that you can have the MLS champion in TSC take on the champion in Tigres and have it be a game. But Tigres, you know, in these two like finals with these two ties with away goals, they come back with an away goal. That is so key for them. And Chivas don't have an away goal, but they also only have a 1 goal deficit to come back on. Red Bulls, I think, and this was the other suggestion, Red Bull, I think, has a great shot because they do have the 2 away goals. They are coming back to play in New York. I think that you could maybe see them in almost a little bit more of a great position. And the other thing I want to say about the Red Bulls game at the Estadio Caliente.
That's a hot stadium.
Yes. Is the play of Luis Robles. Mm. Bradley Wright Phillips was great too. Like he's obviously a huge part of the team's success, but Robles was just instrumental in the team's win. And yeah. I think that, you know, he's been so good for so long, and that at least from the highlights that I got to see was a stellar performance.
Yeah, and he's always been that way with that team, right? I mean, we talked about Joe Bendik and him having ice in his veins. I mean, Luis Robles, he's not without his faults. He's not the most athletic keeper in the world, but he just seems to get to where he needs to be sometimes. And when he's on a roll, there really is no one better. And I agree. I mean, if they gave out goals for every amazing save, New York Red Bulls would win every game by 2 or 3 goals because of his heroics. And when I say he's not athletic, I don't mean to take anything away from him, but he's not what you would consider your classic successful MLS goalkeeper. He's not a big dude. But he just seems to position himself so well and has reflexes like lightning sometimes. And it's also great to see a player that, again, of another generation still succeeding in this one. You see, how much has the style of play changed in MLS since he's been a part of it? And yet he's still consistently one of the best goalkeepers. I mean, that speaks to the way that he reads a game and how he trains.
Mm-hmm. Some other stuff that I wanted to mention. MLS put out its annual list of players by birthplace.
Mm-hmm.
Of the 500-some-odd players, the USA has the most at 290. Canada is next at 32. It is Ghana. No, it's Argentina at 23, Ghana at 18, and France and England have 19. So other way around. But that's your top 5 or 6 in terms of contributing players.
Hmm.
I also had here in sort of continuing the thread we had going on last week in terms of the old new MLS divide and how that will shake out with situations like hashtag save the crew. Atlanta United owner Arthur Blank had this to say: some of the major markets have not performed the way the league would like them to. They are being very selective about the expansion markets now, not only in terms of the market, but in terms of the capability of the owners, whether or not they are willing to make the investments, not only the financial investments, but the investments of energy, passion, thought, etc., to get the things done they have to get done.
Hmm.
Which, I don't know. That's kind of they do love Atlanta, MLS does, and it might be a little bit ominous if you are in a market that feels like it might be a little on notice now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so bizarre. It's so bizarre to see a team like Columbus do so well in their opening game, and I'm sure we'll have another successful season regardless of how it ends, but to still have a giant question mark over it and its future, just it's very bizarre to me in the modern sports world to have that.
Somebody did a Twitter analysis, and I don't have this in front of me, so I can't tell you who it was. Of all of the at mentions by MLS Twitter accounts, Columbus is not high on the list.
No.
Atlanta is it tweets about Atlanta the most, and I believe it does tweet about Columbus the least.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least they recognize that Columbus is part of MLS. You could be a Canadian team, and they're... all weekend long also with these Twitter things with pictures and they're like MLS is back and it just be here's the games today, no Canadian teams, even Toronto was not present. MLS as MLS champs, they couldn't even get a shout on Twitter from MLS. That's okay. How did your fantasy team do this weekend?
Oh, I had this up a moment ago. The other thing, while I look at that, the other thing that I meant to mention last week that we weren't able to get to is that on the CPL watch, there has been no announcement made. However, a group has begun collecting $40 commitments to purchase a 2019 season ticket. Which certainly seems like a deposit to me, which is great news, I think, for Edmonton as a CPL for YEG, is the hashtag, continues its movements up.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope it goes somewhere.
I got 58 points with Davies, Simon, and Teixeira. Being my key performers.
I'm just really excited that the your friend who schooled us last year, I was tied with him. My key performers were Callens, Sweat, Betashur, Valeri, and Kamara. But I've had to make some changes this week because I don't know how things are going to go. I doubled up and put Elise and Kamara together as my strikers. So regardless of how things go in Houston, I'll come out on top. Knowing me now, that means it's going to be a 0-0 draw.
Well, I mean, it's as good of a test of Vancouver's development and bonding of a team as any. To go away to the team that just blew out Atlanta 3-0. What can you do?
What can you do? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we've covered it.
Where can we find you online?
You can find me online at That's So MLS. I also have another podcast. If you like rambling nonsense into the void and talking about nihilism and art and crap, it's called People Doing Things. You can listen to that there. But if you just want to stick to soccer, it's at That's So That's So MLS on Twitter. Also, I made our site look pretty, so check that out. thatsmls.com.
That's awesome. You can find the podcast at thatsmls.com and on iTunes. This is very nice.
Thanks, buddy.
You can find me online at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com, www.lilrubberpellets.com whenever I decide, as I did this weekend, to write something. It happens about once.
I liked your post. It was good.
Thank you. It happens about once a year. So the eclipse has begun. I also edit for Howler magazine, www.whatahowler.com.
Lovely. Well, until next time, don't get sent off. Twice! How are they still doing that? Get it together, guys. Jesus.